All right, John chapter 6 this morning, starting again in verse 1. It says, "And after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great multitude followed him, because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples, and the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come upon him, or unto him, he said unto Philip, Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 pennyworth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said unto him, There is a lad here which has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, Make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes as much as they would. When they were filled, he said unto his disciples, Gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, This is of a truth that prophet that should come into the world." Last week we looked at verse 6. We kind of ended up at verse 6 where Jesus said to Philip to test him. And we looked at some different definitions of test and kind of agreed that the definition that we meant or that John meant as he was writing this was to try or to make a trial of for the purpose of ascertaining his quality or what he thinks or how he would behave himself, what he would do in response to Jesus's question and challenge to him. And we discussed the fact that Jesus was bringing the hopelessness of the situation to Philip so he didn't miss the miracle that was about to happen. And too often we gloss over what God is doing in our lives and we fail to see God working and we miss opportunities to give God the glory for what is being done. And then I think the last thing that I asked last week, and we kind of had to wrap it up and go, but how does God test us today? I think last week, I think one category, and I've kind of come up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 8 different categories per se, that I feel as though God, that we are tested or that God can use as test in our life. And last week, one that was mentioned was our health. And of course, if you haven't been there yet, you probably will be. I know in my life, it seems like, different injuries and different surgeries that have taken place over the years. The Lord has used them to either strengthen my faith or to help me to be more compassionate and empathize with others that are going through similar things. And so, often it's kind of 20/20. When you're going through it, you don't exactly understand why, but after the fact, you can kind of look back and understand it maybe a little bit more. But what other than our health, where else or what other circumstances in life will or does God use as test to prove us, all right? And remember, the definition of test is something to prove or to help us to see how we will react.
Our children.
All right, family and friends, all right? And, whether it's children, whether it's, parents or siblings, I remember, years and years ago, my sister going through a divorce. And, as hard as it was on her, it was difficult on the rest of us. It was difficult on us because, that was something that, in my mind, that can't happen to our family. That can't happen to my sister. Why is that happening? Why does that have to take place? And so even though it wasn't directly affecting me as far as my marriage, but it was something that affected me. When my dad died, the same. You know, that was a great test, really and truly, in my life. And trying to cope with that, trying to understand, why did my dad have to die? You know, why was it, at that point, that time? You know, why couldn't he have a few more years? And again, a lot of there's no questions for that. But it's just we trust the Lord. We come to grips with that. And we move on. All right, what else? All right, employment. All right, often through employment, we are tested. You know, again, it's not a secret, but many of you probably know this, that back in, 11 plus years ago, right before Pastor Sean came, the year before Pastor Sean came, the previous pastor that was here asked me to resign. You know, he wanted me to go ahead and leave so that he, during that last year of his retirement, he did not want me here, and he wanted to kind of open, the congregation to, be accepting of another pastor or opportunity, and Pastor Sean coming in. And so he asked me to step aside, which I did. And again, I'd been here 16 years. And that really came out of left field. I had no inclination, no nothing, when that happened. But my upbringing and what I'd been taught was, if the pastor asks you to do something, or if your boss asks you to do something, you do that. And so I put in my resignation, and I was able to be an interim pastor of a church in Lumberton for 9-10 months. And then, Pastor Sean, when he was voted in as pastor, he called me and he said, would you come back and work for me? And my first day back on staff was was Pastor Sean's first day. And so the Lord, the Lord worked in that. But again, that was a year of testing, 9 or 10 months of testing. And it wasn't real pleasant, as those of you that have gone without employment or not doing what you feel like you ought to be doing, well, no. And then Florence mentioned finances. Finances are a big test. What will we do when we struggle financially? How do we deal with that? How do we cope with that? And what decisions do we make when we are struggling? And we won't get into all the principles there of that. But what else? We have health, employment, family. How about friends? Have friends. Beth and I have been in Fayetteville since 1989. We've had a lot of friends come and go from the church because of the military. You get to know somebody and you enjoy their company, and you have a friendship for 3, 4, 5 years, and then, they PCS and off they go. And, it's tough to then try to form a new friendship, because in the back of your mind, ultimately, I'm going to pour my life into this couple. I'm going to really, form a bond and a friendship, and then, off they go, and I'll probably won't see them again. The most we can do is email, call, text, or, check out pictures on Facebook, nowadays. And so it's, that's a test. That's a proof. Will you continue to invest your life in people, or do you just kind of back off and say, it's not worth it, I don't really care anymore? And so friends, what else? Time constraints. All right, our time. I could probably fit that under service opportunities. We all have time constraints, but what do we do with our time? And that was something I was thinking about last night. It's interesting when, I was thinking back when I was younger, and I thought, on Saturdays it was kind of like you get up, you read the newspaper, you watch cartoons, you kind of hang out around the house, mow the yard, and that's about, there's, then you think, 30 years later, I'm thinking, man, I'm Yesterday I was pretty much nonstop from what, 9 to 6. It was like, wow. You know, there's just like so much more to do now. And I, you know, how does that happen? What? Thank you, Mike. And yet, you know, the Lord still wants us to take time in service for Him and to add that to us. And I know I'm in, you know, it's, I know a lot of people look at, you know, me and think, well, you know, you work at the church, so, you know, that's, you know, what excuse do you have for serving or not serving, whatever. But, you know, from 8 to 4, you know, that's, you know, I'm kind of doing what many of you do, administrative and buildings and grounds and oversight and all of that. You know, that's not really, it's not really service opportunities. You know, I'm working just like you. And I, you know, over the years, I remember, you know, back when Beth and I first came, you know, we were asked to teach four-year-olds, you know, little lambs on Wednesday nights. And I was thinking, man, I don't want to work with little kids, you know. I don't have any, and there's a reason I don't have any, you know. I don't want to work with them. But, you know, that's what the Lord had for us. And so, you know, working with them and, you know, learning from them. And that's one of the reasons we waited so long to have children. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, doing, you know, teaching them. And then I remember I had adults, a couple adult Sunday school classes. And I remember Pastor Sean asked me to teach in 5th and 6th grade. We had a need there, and no one seemed to want to fill that spot. And again, it was, you know, I my daughters were what, 3rd, 4th, 5th grade, somewhere in that range. But, you know, I really didn't want to do that. You know, that wasn't where my heart was at the moment. But again, I thought, you know what, if there's a need to fill, let me fill that. You know, let me see if I can help these 12 and 13 year olds through some of that time into getting them into junior high. You know, over the years, I've been asked to lead singing. That was interesting. But, you know, you do things because an opportunity exists and it needs to be filled. And what I find today is so many people, you know, they don't want to fill an opportunity. They don't want to take on an area of service unless they feel like, you know, well, this is my calling. All right, well, okay, so set that aside and realize, you know what, God needs you. The church needs you. These 12 and 13-year-olds need you. These 4-year-olds need you. You know, the congregation needs somebody to stand up and wave their arms. You know, I didn't have to sing real loud in the mic. I kind of stepped back and, you know, I knew how to wave my arms and keep 4-4 and 3-4 time. I got that. You know, so as long as the piano and organ started, that was back in the day, or the piano and keyboard started at the same time, you know, we were good to go. You know, we handled it. You know, it was better than everybody just trying to do their own thing. And so there are opportunities to serve, and we have to take advantage of them and use those. How about our emotions or our attitudes? Does God use those as times or forms of testing? Okay, yeah. You know, there are constantly things that come into our life that will prove our maturity and prove our growth. Yep. Okay. You know, true temptations to sin as well. How about situations with no reasonable solutions? I remember, 12 years ago, well, it was right after the previous pastor asked me to resign. You know, I was trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do now? And, you know, Beth and I decided, you know, after much prayer, that we were going to buy some rental property. And so we started seeking and looking and found some mobile homes that were for sale. And, you know, I thought, okay, this is going to be great, you know. So I went to the first bank when I had my business plan and had it all, and they read it and said, looks good, but we don't, you know, we won't loan money on mobile homes. I was like, okay. I went to every bank in Fayetteville, and I got the same answer, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And then finally, I had the banker that we did business with at the church. I had called him originally, and he said, no, they didn't do it. And I, you know, it was really a last ditch effort. I was like, I don't know what else to do. So went to see him and I said, can you please help? Or is there anything that you can help me or tell me to do? And, you know, he looked at it and he said, I can make this happen. You know, but that was after weeks of prayer and weeks of really, you know, asking the Lord to intervene. And then, you know, 9 years later or 8 years later when we decided we were ready to sell, that was a little hard. That was even harder. So, you know, I had people call, wanted it, and they didn't have any money. And same thing, you know, they wanted it, but they couldn't get a loan and they couldn't, you know, get it financed and on and on. You know, so that was kind of an emotional roller coaster. You know, somebody calls, oh, we, you know, we're interested, and they met them. You meet with them. They look at the property, and they're all interested and want it. And then it all falls out and falls through. And you know what? Those are situations where there's no solution. There's no human solution. You know, you can't make the bank loan you money. You can't make them loan somebody else money. You can't make somebody want your property or buy your property. Those are things that you have to release and leave them in the Lord's hands and let Him handle that. Let Him take care of it. So, second question, does God know the reason of the test and the desired result? All right, yes. All right, God does. Just as a parent, you know, if you have children, there are times that you will prove your children. You will give them a task. You will give them a problem to solve. And why do you do that? To prove them. To try to see, can they accomplish this? Can they handle this? Are they maturing? You know, you leave, you know, the first time that you leave them home, you know, and you drive down the street and you kind of keep an eye out, see if they'll really do what they're supposed to do. You know, again, you know, why is that? Well, we're as we grow, as we mature, as we try to increase their responsibility, we give those tests or those things to prove them, to see if they can handle it, to see if they are growing and are maturing. And so, yes, God knows the reason of the test, and He knows what He wants, the desired result, what He wants to come to pass in that. And so what happens then if we don't pass that test? Yep. Got to do it over again. And you know, and what I have learned in 50 years, when a test comes into your life, do the best you can to get to pass it the first time. You know, if not, you're going to be doing it all over again. And so the best option is to learn what you need to learn from that test when you're going through it the first time, so that it doesn't have to be repeated and that you don't have to go through it again. So then what should our attitude be during these times of testing? Yep, good. You know, God, what are you trying to teach me? You know, what is it that I need to learn from this? You know, where should my focus be? What you know, God, you're obviously trying to get my attention. What is it that you want in my life? What is it that you are striving to change or to improve or to make better? Or who am I, you know, where are you trying to get me to look? And so our attitude should be a willingness for, you know what, God, teach me what I need to learn. Let me be willing. I'm not going to resist it. I'm not going to be like, you know, in the Old Testament, often the Israelites, you know, they stiffen their neck and they harden their hearts and, you know, they rebel. No, you know, we shouldn't do that. We should be the opposite. We should humble ourselves. We should ask God immediately, you know, God, what do I need to learn? What are you trying to show me and teach me through this? You know, mold me, make me, do with my life as you see fit. And then what should our goal be when we're tested? To pass. What else? All right, to glorify God. Mike?
Opportunity to gain wisdom and wealth.
Okay, to increase in wisdom.
If you're tested or someone else is tested with the same thing,
help. Right, you can help them out. When someone else is going through a similar test, you can share with them. So to become more like Christ, to be conformed to His image so that we can give glory to God. We need to understand that God allows tests to occur and He doesn't expect failure. You know, He doesn't test us and say, I'm going to, when we teach, you know, as a teacher, sometimes you give a test and I never did this, but I worked with some that did. You make a test. Well, as a teacher, you can make it as hard or easy as you choose. You know, it's very subjective. And, you know, if you want your students to suffer a little bit because maybe they haven't been behaving or haven't been studying or haven't been meeting your expectations, you know, you can make a really hard test to give them to prove a point and for them to realize, you know what? You know, this is difficult. This is hard. Or we can go the opposite way. But as a teacher, the expectation when you give a test shouldn't be, you know, I'm going to give a test that everyone fails. You know, as a teacher, the expectation is that, you know, I'm giving a test to get a true, accurate picture of my class and of what I've taught and how well I've communicated the truths to them. And are they getting those truths? Or are they grasping those facts? And so the test ought to be fair. And our goal in the test is that everyone will pass. And the same is true with God. When God tests us, we know that He's not going to test us above that which we are able. He's not going to give us more than we can handle. He will give us the grace that we need to come through that situation, come through that circumstance. But He doesn't expect us to fail. He expects us to pass. He expects us to go through that and to come out on the other side stronger and with our faith and dependence upon Him increase and give Him the glory and honor for what we've just gone through. And it says in verse 6, "But this Jesus said to test Philip, for he, Jesus himself, knew what he would do." God tests us to refine our faith. We see that in James 1, 2. If you want to flip over there, we got a few minutes here. I love the book of James. It's so convicting. But James says in chapter 1, verse 2, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations or testings, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that gives to all men liberally and upbraids not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withers the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perishes. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is the man that endures temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted, and this is towards sin, when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed, that when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift, every perfect gift is from above, and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Of his own will begat he us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man works not the righteousness of God. Wherefore lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness, and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls. Be ye doers of the word, not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. And then verse 25, whoso looketh unto the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deeds. And so a great challenge from Peter, from James, how that our faith is refined. And that as we go through troubles and testings and issues of life, that those are used to grow us and to build us. Peter says in 1 Peter 1:7, the trial of your faith being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found under the praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. And then when we risk by faith, we know by experience. Each time that we're tested and pass, we grow stronger and we're able to handle more. And I have seen that in my life. And I trust that you can see that in yours. That as you go through life, as you're tested, often as you're faced with the test, the initial thought is, how am I ever going to make it through this? You feel so beat down. You feel so burdened, so heavy, and so much is on your shoulders. How am I going to make it through this? But we know that we endure for just a moment. Joy comes in the morning. Weeping only endures for a night, and the joy comes in the morning. And when we get through to the other side, we look back and say, okay, I see how God brought me through that. And then when we're faced with the next test, what does that give us? It gives us the confidence of knowing, you know what? God helped me through the last time. God was with me. God brought me through that. So my faith is strengthened, and I can handle more through each test because I know that God is with me, that God is helping me, and that God will see me through just like he did the last time. He'll see me through the next time. And the next, and the next, and the next, because the testings don't stop until either Christ returns or we die, and he calls us home. And so don't shun the test. Don't be disheartened by the testing. Realize that they are meant for our good. That is when we grow. That is when we mature. That is when we gain strength. And so it's not fun going through the valleys. I understand that. But it's in the valleys that we see the Lord the best. We have the best picture of him, the clearest picture of him. And maybe you're not like I am, but when things are going well, The thing that I struggle with is when it seems like everything's going great, I feel, and my struggle is, I don't need to depend upon God so much when everything's going well. And one of the lessons that I think I fail and repeat periodically is, things are going great, and I feel like, okay, I don't need God so much anymore. And then guess what happens? He brings me down to the valley, and I think, oh man, I did it again. God, yes, I need you. I'm sorry. I really do. Help me not to get that mindset. You know, help me even on the mountaintop to realize, you know what, God, you're still in control. I still need you. You know, I can't do the life on my own. And I've got to have you, whether it's good or bad or in between. You know, I still need you in my life. I still need you in control. And so let me encourage you with that this morning. Father, I pray that you would help us, that as we go through tests of life, that we would rely upon you, that we would trust you, that we would look to see what it is that you are striving to teach us or show us or mature us, what you're striving to do through that test, that we would be willing and have an eagerness to learn, that we wouldn't fight against it, that we wouldn't struggle against it, because in essence we're struggling against you and fighting against you. May we fully rely on God. May our attitude be one of desire to know you more and to have you conform us to the image of Christ and to make us more like your Son, so that we can be more effective witnesses, that we can reach more people, that we can be a better example of you in this dark world, and then ultimately that we can give you glory and honor for all that you've done. And we'll thank you in Christ's name. Amen.